Yeah, well, hi everybody. I want to welcome you to our continuation of work with a treatise on cosmic fire. Supposedly in depth, we can see how far in depth really takes us, because this is a book for initiates, but we can get something out of it, I think, and we can certainly exercise our mind acutely and thereby prepare that well-stocked mind using the fifth ray, which Master DK is insisting that we have to prepare. We also have to see the divine in everybody. There are four of the requirements. Actually, I'm making progress with letters on occult meditation and working finally on some thoughts that connect with the new esoteric schools. It's amazing stuff. I worked on that extensively in a written commentary, which is on Makara. But I'm just noticing new things all the time. And even though we may be preparing for something quite, you know, far ahead, we are at least preparing. So all we have to do is get through this attack, which is presently underway from the forces of darkness, trying to rob people of their individual will in how they may be governed. So it is problematic at the time, and it may take almost a century to resolve. But by the time the great Lord, the Christ, again reappears, I suppose in his Maya Varupa, and with physical presence, by that time, the new schools will move from the preparation for the preparation into at least the possibility of the preparatory schools emerging. So I'm beginning program number 70 in that, and I've been sending it out to a lot of you, and maybe you'll be interested to study there. Also, Tuya finds it advisable to change tomorrow morning's work on the climate change to 5 o'clock in the evening, GMT, as a broadcast, I believe. And so, you know, at our usual YouTube station. So please, maybe, BL, you can put that into the chat if you'd be so kind, that we will have climate change at 5 p.m. GMT instead of at 6 a.m. GMT. There's a lot to prepare for. And, you know, probably many of you are from the United States, and you know the Texas debacle, which is now occurring. Terrible thing. For many reasons, involving deaths, people freezing to death, finding that they cannot live in their homes, piling on 15 blankets just to try to survive this tremendous cold now into its seventh day. And all of this has to do, or so much of it has to do, with an isolative attitude that rebels as a state personality instead of allowing something else to emerge with help from the government and so forth. So I think some of that will be included tomorrow in the discussion of the climate change. Let's see here. Yeah, there's many, many things about that. And Yvonne says the homes are flooded indeed. Jesse says no drinking water. Pipes are breaking. Yes. It shows what happens when, for political reasons, people isolate themselves from the general flow of a more salutary possibility. People will have to give up some of their personality, so-called independence, in order to have the kind of united front that will guarantee their safety. And I suppose being a very dominating red state, it will cause some people to awaken to the implications of letting that kind of politics rule policy. It's almost inevitable that a crisis will occur. And as Jesse has said here too, the politicians have kept their taxes low, not having regulations. In other words, it's all the things about license rather than freedom.
Okay, freedom. Michael?
Yes?
Excuse me. We need to confirm, all right? The climate broadcast was supposed to be at 6 a.m. Tomorrow, and you said to change it to 5 a.m., or did you say to 5 p.m.?
5 p.m., 5 p.m. BO.
Okay, I'm sorry. I put it wrong. So thank you, everyone, for...
We'll straighten that out. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
5 p.m. That's getting a little early. Yeah, 5 p.m. tomorrow. Yeah, okay. Right. Now, friends, just to welcome you here, thanking Michael Crow and BL for managing many technical details, and welcome to Annette and Ario, Astra, Catherine, Deborah, and Francois, Georgina, and Heike, Jesse, and Joe, Joan, and Johi, Leslie, Martine, Miro, Nessa. Looks like we have two Nessas there, but okay. Risto, Stacia, Thomas, and Tia. And Tuya is here, and I'd like to make Tuya you should be a co-host, I would guess. Vera, and Vicky, and Vivienne, and Yvonne, and Zenaide. Welcome to all of you. So, back to the foundations of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. This map in front of us is very important. Take a look particularly at everything is significant, okay? In relation to Sanat Kumara, the three of the Buddhas of activity are listed, and they are interlocking with Sanat Kumara, and three esoteric Buddhas are not listed, but okay, they are there making the 108 planetary Kumaras. But we're going to be concentrating a little bit here on something that's rather parallel, but not exactly the same. And that is that the three logoi of will, love, wisdom, and active intelligence, they are cosmic beings and extensions of the solar logos, are also interlocking. Let's make sure that you're seeing that. Yeah, you are. But they are not interlocking with the same, with the solar logos in the same way. And I've sometimes wondered, he seems to be leaving the esoteric Buddhas out of consideration, or at least not on the map. And I'm wondering if he's doing that up here as well, and that instead of only three, there might be three more somehow. So now we're going to turn to page 63, right before that, and we're looking at the threefold logos. In the same way, the seven planetary entities, the seven heavenly men, are seven logoi. And, you know, our planetary, our various planetary logoi in our solar system are actually cosmic beings. They do have their principles located on the cosmic planes. And the what we call the cosmic physical plane just really deals with their etheric physical nature, but other parts of their nature are on the cosmic astral and cosmic mental and even beyond. So though they are in the solar system, we think of them as cosmic beings who in their totality form the body of the threefold logos. So, when it comes to the threefold logos, the solar logos is what is called the undifferentiated logos, a cosmic entity. But then we have a threefoldness that emanates from it, and which I just showed you on the map of these hierarchies. So we have that cosmic lord of will or power interlocking with the cosmic lord of love, wisdom, and the cosmic lord of active intelligence. Those are the major three. And I'd like to say that when it comes to understanding how the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh of any system of rays or logoi or entities is formed, look for combinations that arise from the blending of the first three. For instance, to find the fourth major ray, or maybe logos, we blend rays one and two. At least that's my estimation at the moment. To find the fifth logos, or ray, we blend rays one and three. To find the sixth, we blend rays two and three. And to find the seventh, we look for an equally balanced proportion of all the first three. So that's a hypothesis. And basically he tells us that Ortiz Subo Rho tells us that these four additional come from the three primary, just like colors do. Okay, and then we say that this triple logos is sevenfold in manifestation, and the sevenfold, seven planetary logoi arise from the three. That's basically what I've been saying. The Kabbalistic configuration is one leading to three, leading to seven. So there's, you know, with a sevenfoldness in which the first three are duplicated on a lower turn of the spiral, we're always going to have three above. So 10 is the Kabbalistic number. And out of all that, there is kind of an 11th, which is the undifferentiated logos. Now, I don't think we're going to get too much into what T. Suba Rowe says here. It's rather lengthy. And but maybe I'll just read it. As a general rule, whenever seven entities are mentioned in the ancient occult science of India, in any connection whatsoever, you must suppose that those seven entities came into existence from three primary entities, and that these three entities, again, are evolved out of a single entity or monad, from one to three to seven, in which the three are duplicated on a lower turn of the spiral. And basically the map, one of the maps shows this. And let's see if I can, I want to get that. Here it is from Tuya. I want to show this, how this works. Notice that there are three majors up on the logoic plane. If we just consider the etheric physical plane cosmically, and then there are seven, but the three originals are duplicated on a lower turn of the spiral as subtypes. So from three to seven, and it all comes out of the one solar logos that is represented above. You have to be very careful when you're reading these maps, because a solar logos can mean many things. It might mean just a simple sun, but it might also mean a cosmic logos or something even beyond it. So the three logoi are here, and I just showed that to you in the earlier map. Those were the interlocking, what he calls cosmic logoi, of will, love, wisdom, and active intelligence. All of these principles are operating, and they are standard up and down. So we want to get the idea of the fundamental organization of this. Now, going back. So he says, to take a familiar example, the seven colored rays in the solar ray are evolved out of three primary colored rays, and the three primary colors also coexist within the four secondary colors in the solar ray. The four secondaries are derived from the three primaries. Similarly, the three primary entities which brought man into existence coexist in him with the four secondary entities. So it's not like we leave the three out. We duplicate the three on the monadic plane and then add four more. Entities which arose from different combinations of the three primary entities. He's not talking here about whether he's dealing with light or pigment, but maybe in either one we would have combinations that we recognize. In Christian terminology, these are the three persons of the Trinity and the seven spirits which are before the throne. We might call them on our planet ray lords, who are reflections of the seven greater sacred ray lords who are planetary logoi. And he says, compare, our God is a consuming fire, from Hebrews 12:29. Okay, so, you know, he has his own explanation. He was a very high soul, probably the equivalent of Blavatsky. They were both probably fourth degree initiates. Then a bit more. Well, I'm not sure that it's necessary to read this one. I don't think so, because we'll just, but take note of it, and I've made some commentary in a written form about it. He's basically referencing Mr. Sinnott's book, and I think Sinnott was a disciple of Master K.H., and he's talking about the different levels of Krishna and the relationship of great rishis to four preceding manus. It gets complicated, and I don't think we need to get off onto that. By the way, when we talk about Sinnott's book, Esoteric Buddhism, we have to remember that if we don't double the D and we have Buddhism, it means esoteric wisdom. So the word Buddha and Buddha are very equivalent somehow. We're talking about the esoteric wisdom of the ages, and not necessarily an instantiation of it. Okay, I mean, I'm tempted, but you know, it would take another 15 minutes to do this. I don't want to do that. And then, but this one is really interesting, this footnote. And you should keep the chart maybe in mind, and I want to make sure that you're seeing it. I think you are seeing it. That we start looking at how to combine the sevens. Now, there are smaller groups, maybe family races and other things of that nature, but he starts with branch races, which are subdivisions of the sub-races, which are subdivisions of the root races. Okay, so seven branch races make one sub-race. Seven sub-races make one root race. Seven root races make one world period. It has to do with the duration of activity on a globe, of which there are seven exoteric globes in each one of those planetary chains. Seven world periods, you know, involving the globes, make one round. And seven rounds make one chain period. And then if we combine seven chain periods, we get the whole planetary scheme. What I've tried to explain before, at least in my estimation, is that there are rounds which are confined to activity within a chain, and there are greater types of rounds which involve all the chains. And I call them scheme rounds, whereas the kinds of rounds that are confined to the chain, I call them chain rounds. And then he jumps to the number 10, which is somehow fitting when you consider how DK works his esoteric astrology. 10 planetary schemes, you know, throwing Vulcan into it. There are many more, of course, but they are lesser. 10 planetary schemes make one solar system. So at least you have a nice structural tabulation to help bring order to our thinking. Now, right now, we are living on the fourth globe of the fourth chain in the middle of the fourth chain round, and probably in the middle of the fourth scheme round as well. And our planet, our planetary scheme, is the fourth. Why? Vulcan, Mercury, Venus, Earth. There are other little things going on there, intra-Vulcanian, intra-Mercurial planets. There are lesser planetary entities either disappearing or appearing, and all of that can be considered part of the detail in our solar system. I was reading that when you're in a preparatory school, you are studying yourself as a microcosm, and your personality and your inner God and your soul response are the main things. And that's what we call the study of God immanent within. But when you start to study in the advanced schools, you're studying God transcendent, and that it makes a lot of difference what's going on in the solar system and in the local cosmos. We can't go too far, of course, because even the one about whom naught may be said is just one of 49 in local space. And we can't even hardly say anything intelligent about the one, that super cosmic logos to which we belong. So the universe in its subjective playing out will last a long time until, well, it's just a huge number of Earth years, and we have to have a whole new time scale, which is not based on the rapid appearance and disappearance of the personality, but which is based on the much longer duration of soul life. Literally, you know, millions and millions of years, and the monadic life even longer. So that's a good tabulation, and be aware of it footnote number 20. So now the cosmic entities we're talking about, just again to do what? To just remind us, are these three. Now we're going to be talking about them. They are differentiations of the solar logos. And as I've said before, each one of them comprises three planetary logoi. Now you turn to page 99 of Esoteric Psychology 2, and you understand that Saturn, Mars, and Earth are the three planetary logoi that comprise this green circle, whereas Uranus, Venus, and Jupiter are the three planetary logoi that comprise the blue circle. And I've made a hypothesis that Vulcan, Neptune, or less Pluto, Vulcan, Neptune, or Pluto, Neptune, Vulcan, are the three planetary logoi comprising the red circle, with Mercury as the intermediary between all of them. I believe I mentioned that. But this is the so-called solar systemic, father, son, or child, and Holy Spirit, connected with the mother aspect. And maybe each one of us belong somehow to one of these more than the other from a monadic point of view. Now, all of that is far ahead. We still have to learn how to focus as souls. And that's still a ways ahead of us. You know, in other words, we're trying. We're trying. And we're moving in that direction. Now, so when it comes to the green circle, each of the three cosmic entities in his essential essence is in his essential essence fire. Might be fire by friction, solar fire, electric fire. The whole book is about fire. And fire is basically substance motion. Sometime we should just try to define what fire really is. Is fire being, or is fire derived from being? And I would say the latter is the case. So, in point of time, the cosmic lord, in point of time, the cosmic lord of active intelligence, considered from the standpoint of cosmic evolution, because it started earlier, is more evolved or unfolded than his two brothers. He is the life of matter, sustaining the manifestation of matter, and maybe a being in a way matter itself. He is the life of matter. The third circle is its latent internal fire. And we've been talking about the internal fires and the latent fire and the radiatory fire. His is the fire essence that lies at the heart of the sun, of the planet and of man's material forms. So we're talking about not the subjective cosmic vehicles of the solar logos, we're talking about the etheric physical nature of the solar logos, to which this cosmic lord of active intelligence, the first to appear, is related. And he is the sum total of the past and asserts a very karmic drag, if I can call it that, upon the development of the present solar system. That takes us then to the cosmic lord of love. Now, if this was a Word document, I could put this in blue, but if I do, you're not going to see it. But maybe if I do light blue, you can. The cosmic lord, the lord of cosmic love, the second circle underneath the solar logos, the blue circle, now seeks union with his brother. It's a great 2-3 merging, just like what's happening on our planet with its second ray soul and its third ray personality. A great 2-3 merging. And just like generally, what's happening with us. Our soul is generically ruled by the second ray, and the personality, whatever its ray may be, is generically ruled by the third. So 2 and 3, 2 and 3, 2 and 3 are trying to merge. Now, the trouble is, as DK explains to us, 2 and 3 don't get along so well. And he had a disciple who was a first-ray soul, having her rays were very interesting. First-ray soul, fifth-ray personality, fourth-ray mind, second-ray astral body, third-ray physical body. And she was having trouble, again, merging the 2 and 3. Probably because the 3 generally in cosmic space of a local kind is out of alignment. It just hasn't been elevated to the point it should be. So anyway, the Lord of Cosmic Love now seeks to union with his brother. And in point of time, embodies all the present. What I'm going to do here is I'll just use that kind of blue. It's not the kind of blue I would prefer. But anyway, it's blue. He is the sum total of all that is embodied now. He is conscious existence, because consciousness is emphasized particularly, not just activity, but consciousness in this second solar system, second major solar system, really the fifth in a series of solar systems. He is this cosmic lord of love, the sun divine, and his life and nature evolve through every existing form. So that great second ray lord, that cosmic lord, is pouring his essence through every one of us at this time, because we are engaged in a solar system, a second major solar system, in which this type of energy, his energy, is dominating now. So just think of it, then, you know, whatever our rays, whatever our signs, etc., we are now supposed to be cultivating the energy of love wisdom. It simplifies things, you know. There are many details that differentiate me from you and this from that, but behind it all is this great cosmic Lord of love. Now, the Lord of cosmic will, that's the red circle, holds hid the future within his plans and consciousness. And that's going to be in the next solar system. And will we be here then? Well, we are going to, many of us, maybe 85%, going to the star Sirius for training to become solar angels. Now, will we return during the vast period in which this second major solar system has yet to play out, or will it be in the next solar system with individualization occurring not on the mental plane, but on the monadic plane? Well, those are questions that we probably can't answer. We're into a huge time scale, unlike what we usually consider even a lengthy time scale, given our normal personality perspective. So the past, the present, and the future. And, you know, if I can say it without necessarily understanding it all, there will be a seventh synthetic solar system. And it will occur with the union of past, present, and future, and it will occur within the eternal now. And about it, hardly anything is said, except that the number seven, which is really the fourth major solar system and the seventh in a series, will occur once the solar system of will has run its course. Now, we are talking about just huge time spans, way, way beyond what people are thinking. We're talking, you know, trillions of years. So it's kind of puts things in proportion and confers upon us the tendency to increase our patient approach. Because when things get so big and so long, what other choice do you have except to go along and be patient in the kind of gradual development in terms of Earth years that is scheduled for the remainder of this solar system, through which we have fulfilled half the duration, and the coming solar system. Who knows how long it lasts? They are all three sons of the one Father. Who are these cosmic logoi are sons of the one Father. The three, all children of the one. All three, the aspects of the one God, especially, you know, the first three primary aspects, all three are spirit, all three are soul, and all three are rays emanating from one cosmic center. So that's an important sentence. He equates God, spirit, and rays. All three are substance. But in the past, one Lord was the elder son. Now, in the science of triangles, that would mean that that particular cosmic Lord of intelligence was on the top of the triangle. You know, we've been talking about, in our science of triangles, we've been talking about triangles in rotation. And so cosmic intelligence would have been on top. Now, increasingly, moving into that position is cosmic love, to be on the top of the triangle. And cosmic will is not there yet by any means. And this will apply, of course, to the little triangles within our etheric system. I mean, we might identify, well, it's basic. Well, just turn to page 170 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. See, we're on page 63 now. So just let me know if I mess this up. But I'm going to try to go here. 170. And there it is. Now, these are, and I trust you can see that. Yes, you can. These triangles in our etheric body are triangles in rotation. Now, you know, let's talk about man controlled from the mental plane. Or let's talk about something more relevant. Man partially controlled by the ego, advanced man, heart, throat, and head, the four lesser centers, and the alta. At different times, the throat will be on top at first, the heart will be maybe next, I'm not sure, but finally, the four lesser centers and the alta will be on top of that triangle in rotation. So when you are thinking about your own electrical triangular setup in your own etheric body, realize that you may be dealing with a certain triangle, but which is the aspect which at the moment of your present development is, as we say, on top of the triangle. And so it goes with all the others. Okay. All three are substance, but in the past, one Lord was the elder son. In the present, another Lord comes to the fore, and in the future, still another, but this is only so in time. In time. So, since it has something to do with time, I'll just make it green. Because the third ray rules time and space. And here is another one of those statements that requires initiatory consciousness in order to be understood. From the standpoint of the eternal now, none is greater nor less than another. For the first shall be last, the last shall be first, and the first last. So this is a way of dealing with Alpha and Omega. And out of manifestation, time is not. And freed from objectivity, states of consciousness are not. Well, that's going to be not for everybody to understand, is it? But basically, he's talking about entering the consciousness, the awareness of being, transcending time, transcending space and the various objective states of consciousness, and entering into something that just doesn't change, and that is being itself. So we've dealt now with three principle cosmic logoi, which are aspects of the one solar logos in whom we live and move and have our being, and the monad for each of us is that which finds its home within the sun. That's a quote-unquote, I forget what page, but from Initiation, Human and Solar. We are solar beings. Now, right now, we're trying to make a go of it right here on planet Earth. And it's difficult enough because we're torn between the opposites. And we are called adjudicators between the pair of opposites. Okay. And we learn what is of the soul and what is of the personality. And we learn what is of the spirit and of the soul personality. Now, I will be taking your thoughts and questions as we go. Interesting questions are being asked, but the whole thing has an electrical interpretation, and some of the fifth ray types will present the mysteries or encounter the mysteries in terms of electricity, positive, negative, and neutral. We're told that neutral electricity is not something we really know much about at all. And that's because we don't know much about solar fire at all. And further, pralaya is a cessation of activity. But the eternal now can be realized at any point in the midst of activity, in the midst of the interchange of energies. The eternal now, past, present, and future, can be realized by the initiate consciousness, and one does not have to wait for that cessation of activity we call pralaya. The fire of spirit is the essential fire of the first Lord of Will, plus the fire of the second Logos of Love. You know, we hear about love and will, how important they are, and even in the causal body, the strictly knowledge petals begin to disintegrate and give over to the intuitive wisdom of the Buddhic plane before the causal body is destroyed. So we've had a lot to do with the fire of activity, the fire of the past. And now we're moving into the fire of love, wisdom, and as much as possible into the combining of love and will, which we could call then the fire of spirit. Now, how will we know when we achieve this? Well, it's just going to be a different perception altogether. These two cosmic entities, remember, underneath the solar logos in the map, these two cosmic entities blend, merge, and demonstrate as soul. We need the spirit in order to demonstrate the soul, basically. And that's how individualization took place before the solar angels arrived on the scene to facilitate the moving out of a condition of retardation. We were held back by our own mistakes, and the solar angels come in to help us achieve a schedule that we should have kept but did not. These two cosmic entities blend, merge, and demonstrate as soul. Interestingly, even at the first initiation, the monad is active within the soul, although we in our brain consciousness don't realize that. And as individualization took place on the moon chain and in the previous solar system, the monad was active in providing the goal for upward striving animal man. So, demonstrate as soul, utilizing for purposes of manifestation the aid of the third logos, which has already been developed. So the three fires do blend and merge. I wish there was the right color that I could do here. If I was working in Word, I could do it. In this fourth round, and on this fourth globe of our planetary scheme, the fires of the third logos of intelligent matter are fusing with the fires of cosmic mind, you know, which involves the second aspect, showing as will or power, and animating the thinker on all planes. Important statement. All three are merging. Intelligent matter, cosmic mind from which comes will, but at the same time, the higher mind has to do with the soul nature of our planetary logos, and it showing as will or power, and animating the thinker, the soul, on all planes. The object of their cooperation is the manifestation of the cosmic Lord of Love. So there from electricity, when the first aspect and the third combine, it is for the purpose of bringing forward the demonstration of that form of neutral electricity that is solar fire. this should be pondered upon, for it reveals a mystery. And, well, you know, you could stop right there and spend a long time pondering about how the one and the three yield the greater development of the two. That's what we're trying to do on our planet now, and in our own lives, bring the two out. Not that it's so easy to reach the first aspect, but we are striving meditatively into the second aspect. But from a larger perspective, he's saying how it works on our globe and in our planetary scheme. The third logos connects with the fire of cosmic mind, which demonstrates, interestingly, as will or power. Well, cosmic mind, from another perspective, is the soul and love wisdom, but we are not into the monad of our planetary logos. We're into the willpower demonstrating through cosmic mind. Put those two together, and what's important is that love, wisdom emerge. Always, always what's important for us individually and in our groups and in our nations and in humanity is that love, wisdom emerge. And when we look around, we realize that glamour and illusion are thwarting that emergence, but we know a little bit about it. And so internally and through meditation and through our service, whether inner or outer, we can facilitate the emerging of love wisdom and achieve what the Christ consciousness says to confer the mind as it is in Christ. The blending of the three fires, the merging of the three rays, and the cooperation of the three logoi have in view at this time and within this solar system the development of the essence of the cosmic Lord of Love, the second person of the logoic trinity. That is the principle that we should take away from all this. Three fires, three rays, three logoi will blend. And at this time, maybe not other times, but at this time, and within this solar system, the blending, the emergence of the cosmic Lord of Love is the goal. Earlier, it was not so. Later, it will not be. But now it is. When viewed from the cosmic mental plane, now, you know, DK says he personally has not even been to the cosmic astral plane, but he knows enough to be able to make this kind of statement. When viewed from the cosmic mental plane, these three constitute the personality of the logos. Always there is a central life and its threefold expression, which we call the personality, and are seen functioning as one. Hence the secret, well recognized as fact, though not understood, of the excessive heat occultly expressed of the astral or central body of the triple personality. Well, it's that kind of system, an emotionally polarized solar logos, hence the astral emphasis, leaning towards, eventually, cosmic mental polarization. But still, it's a Devic system, and it has to do with the stimulation of the cosmic astral body that the second logos under the main one, the blue circle, is connected with. Astral body, animates and controls the physical body, and its desires hold sway in the majority of cases. And that's for the person or whatever group or nation, the astral body rules and controls the etheric physical body built up under the green circle, the sub-logos of the solar logos, who was dominating in the last major solar system. It demonstrates in time and space the correspondence of temporary union of spirit and matter, this astral body does. The fires of cosmic love and the fires of matter blended. Well, that takes us back to the two and the three, which all of us are trying to achieve somehow. And a similar analogy is found in the heat apparent in this second solar system. Okay. I think that's going to have to be, well, basically he just says, the inner fires of the atom can likewise be seen functioning along similar lines, and their demonstration already somewhat recognized by science. This being so, there exists no necessity for further elaboration. And then again, you know, here's Bhagavan Das speaking, but we won't get off into the Hindu terminology right now. Okay, three are the personality. They function as one. The dominant is the astral body in this solar system. It is the most heated up. It naturally is going to relate much to Mars. The central body is the dominant body, and it controls the physical body, and desire holds sway in the human being, in the group, on the planet, and finally within the solar system. Spirit and matter united bring out this heat in this cosmic love system, and account for the emergence of heat in the solar system through which we are living. So, you know, practically speaking, this is why it's so difficult to train the astral body. It's like wild horses, you know, and it's an undivided plane promoted by the particular conditions of our astrally polarized, presently astrally polarized solar logos. So we'll start next time, whenever that might be, with beginning well, when's our next cosmic fire? Do we see it? Beginning morning. I suppose it's morning.
Hold on, I'm looking. It won't be next week because of the pre-full moon. It's going to be 6 p.m. on Friday, the 19th of March.
So it's p.m.
Yes.
Okay.
At least that's what I'm getting from the master calendar.
Okay, good. All right, well, there's a lot to think about, and all of us are being trained to think in the terms that Master DK is noting through his particular use of language. So just hang on, and we'll be okay. Heat in the second solar system. Excessive heat, excessive difficulty in training the astral body and the control by the astral body of the etheric physical. In other words, desires rule. And later, as we develop more, the mind will take over. And just the way you hold on to the chariot, the horse is pulling the chariot, you know. Ben Hur was on the other night, and I saw some snippets of it. Four horses and a chariot and a driver. Well, you have to hold on, and the mind will do that so that the horses don't run away with the show. And that's what happens in the case of so many. And basically, when we have that riot in the Capitol on January 6th, if you look at how the people were with their mob psychology, the horses were running away with the whole process and blocking out a wiser form of mental control. So that'll take us as far as we need to go right now tonight. Tui and I have a 10 o'clock meeting, so we can only go so far, you know, planning for the next conference, which I hope you can attend remotely, because it will be a remote conference, a lengthy process, with a lot of lectures and meditative opportunities and studies in astrology and the rays and, you know, the usual fullness of the kind of conferences we've been offering now for, oh, ever since 1986, I think. So, you know, we have to get all of that ready for you. So, your thoughts. BL.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Joe has said, I'm thinking that if one were a dreamy individual, that it is always imagining what might be in some future time, that would be a possible demonstration of future Ray 1 combining with Ray 3, the past. The result would be development of Ray 2, love and wisdom in the present. And then she asked, does this make sense?
I'd have to think about it, Joe. The minute you start talking about that dreamy individual, I immediately think of the way Neptune understands things, with Neptune being a major second ray monad planet. Uranus ray 1, monadically Neptune ray 2, Saturn ray 3. See, from a certain point of view, the first ray and the third ray together can be very materialistic. And if you look at China with its Taurus soul, and maybe if you look at Israel or the Jewish group with the Ray 1 and Ray 3, there's a lot about will and matter. But DK does say that the combination of the two will help to force the second ray to emerge. But when we're looking dreamily, it suggests the astral plane. And the astral plane can be connected with the second ray, yes, but also very much with the sixth ray, which, is not too realistic, but engages in dreams and looks ahead with that kind of anticipation of ideal things to come. So I'd be thinking now about whether the one and three together work out in humanity as often they do with, like in politics, for instance. We have a will and we want power and we calculate so we get it, one and three. Or whether we can enter a stage in which neutral solar, fire, electricity does emerge, and the second ray. I think it's a bit of both. The second ray can be very, very clear, very thoughtful, taking into consideration all kinds of perspectives. Not so much with the Neptune sixth ray, because after all, Neptune really operates more on the sixth ray right now for humanity than it does on the second ray, its monadic ray. So, I'm thinking more of Neptune and the sixth ray and of idealism in terms of the dreams of what might be. So I'll give that some thought, Joe. That's all I can say.
She says, yeah. Love the answer, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't really see any other questions or hands up at this point.
Well, I don't blame people because, when we're dealing with cosmic fire, especially when we're dealing with the matter aspect, which tends to be the province of the fifth ray and some of the seventh ray, the rays are a bit different than the ones that we usually think in terms of. So we do have, quite a foundation here that we're trying to establish so that when we get to, will we ever, to page 222, when solar fire comes into consideration, we will have this very solid, factual foundation about the lower fires, which are the builders of the foundation under the third ray. That's one of the names of the third ray Lord, the builder of the foundation. We'll have that to support our understanding of the soul nature. Solar fire, the fire of higher mind, and so forth. See, in one way, abstract mind is the way will gets to us. And then from another point of view, higher mind involving the second and third subplanes is very much connected with the second ray. So we learned today that we have to blend will and love, and we see that we can do that on the first three subplanes of the higher mental plane. But of course, first we have to learn how to think abstractly, and we have to learn how to think within the soul with our mind held steady in the light, and not an immediately easy thing to do. So our work is cut out for us, and I noticed that DK uses the word discipline a lot, and he uses the word rigid discipline. Now, I wonder how many of us are willing to submit ourselves to the rigid, not giving way, to the rigid discipline required to truly build the foundation on which soul life can be based. That's a question. Okay, we have more. BL?
Yes. And Veronica says, in one of the meditations, we say, I dream not. When one dreams, does he use matter of the astral plane? Is that why we must dream not? Or is it because it's for the personal self?
Maybe a bit of both. About dreams, DK discusses them in esoteric psychology too. It comes from some old Atlantean root, which means both benefit and harm. So I guess it depends on the quality of the dream. But the idea is that as students of esotericism, we try to be realistic and not off in some kind of dream world, which does not have a possibility of manifesting or of manifesting the divine plan. So it takes us away from manifestational reality. On the other hand, Tuya told me a story about a man who made his way into a sacred Navajo council, which was entirely remote, and to which no one was invited that was not deeply involved in the Navajo tradition. But he was compelled to find something, and he found it. And the chief then, when the man explained himself, because in a way he was an intruder, but he explained his deep feeling for something that they were doing, the chief said, you have dreamed well. And they allowed him to stay. So a dream can also be a vision of future possibilities and not just an escape. Now in our, I play my part with stern resolve, et cetera, to dream not, nor to rest, that's an escape. That kind of dream, we're off in an ideal world and we're not caring about how it manifests as part of the divine plan. That type of dreaming takes us away from tangible manifestation of the divine plan. And that's, you know, it's a bit like what's called the glamour of aspiration, or let's say the fourth veil of the etheric plane is called the veil of aspiration. You stay above the possibility of real needed manifestation. That's the kind of dreaming that we want to avoid, but not the kind of dreaming that is a possible vision of greater reality, which we will work to manifest. At least that's how I understand it.
Okay, I don't see any more comments or hands or anything.
I see one more thing here. Perhaps those of us that are strongly ruled by Saturn have no other choice. But that turns out to be a blessing. Yeah, I mean, you know, Saturn takes you right down to physical manifestation. And Saturn is not about escaping from anything or resting when you feel like resting. It's all about must do, must do. My old teacher used to say, must do is a stern commander. So Saturn and Neptune, if you think about it, one leads away from the physical plane and one takes you right down to the physical plane. Now, if they could work well together, then the dream or the vision could be manifest through Saturn. The Neptunian dream or vision could be manifest through Saturn. So, you know, Saturn is a great friend, friend of disciples, and it is that planet, which is the planet particularly of discipleship. And by forcing us to get the job done, we definitely benefit. So we have to make friends with Saturn. And Jesse is saying here, start recording, but okay, we are recording at the present time.
That was a long time ago.
Oh, okay. All right, so things are not necessarily death right. I see. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, is there anything else, anyone who wants to speak or put something into the chat box? Because if not, you know, we'll close with the great invocation. And tomorrow evening, then at 5 p.m., we will have our work with climate change. I guess, you know, when climate change, the effects of it become so drastic that they're not only at your front door, but they're in your house with icicles in your house, then you begin to pay attention. And let's hope that we all wake up before it's too late for so many of us.
Okay, we have a hand up. Vera's got her hand up.
Okay, Vera.
I'm muted, yes, hello. Icicles in the house and dead bodies in the Yemen. But that's not my question. I have a question, please. I have CD-ROM, and I know that somewhere in the blue books, I read about, I think it was in connection with the seventh ray, a manifestation about the correct manifestation needs to be at the correct time, place, and mode, and technique, and I cannot find it. Mm-hmm. Would you?
Would I? If I could, I would. But I do know that it is said of the Manu, again, maybe somewhere in the blue books, that he wants to assure that people do the right thing at the right time, in the right place, in the right way.
Yes.
And Master Maurya in Agni Yoga talks about the piling up of errors, things done at the wrong place, at the wrong time, in the wrong way, for the wrong purpose, you know, and, you know, he goes on piling up all these mistakes. And he just says that at some point, errors and mistakes have to stop. So, you know, it's, I can't tell you where it would be. I'm not aware, but I am aware that doing things correctly, and, you know, he's in the department of the Manu, Master Maurya, is a big deal for him. There's a story about him which gives me the shudders, that a man was weaving a carpet for him. I think he was Akbar at the time. A great tapestry, great carpet. Took 10 years to do, something like that. And he brought it to Akbar, Maurya, presented it to him, and Maurya noticed that one thread was out of place. And he made the man do it all over again. Now, you know, you could, that's enough to give you the tremors.
Yeah.
Because usually we are much more permissive than that, right? But maybe, you know, thinking in the long term about the unforgettable lesson that will last through all of the series of lives in the mind of the weaver. And he also said that mistakes in books are like sores, running sores, something like that. Very unpleasant imagery, and they have to be corrected. You know, he says, I want you to be so concrete that you have mastery over the teaching as you would have mastery over a block of ice. And obviously there's some kind of concretion thing going on there. He doesn't allow us to get away with our errors. He talks about the castle of errors, the place built in the wrong time, in the wrong place, for the wrong purpose, in the wrong method. And he says, surely this must finally cease. So, you know, if you begin to think about how exacting the masters can be, it just makes me freeze a little bit, because I realize how much my life and other lives are based on the principle of inexactitude. We get away with certain things. We allow ourselves certain leeway, but it's not really allowed the closer we get to the goal.
So it was Maurya, Master Maurya, first try with this exactitude, first try.
The Castle of Errors. Maybe you can find it in the Agni Yoga teachings. Now, the trouble with the Agni Yoga search engine, it's not as good as the search engine for Bailey. Because with Bailey, you can put different words and it finds them all together.
Yeah.
But with, you've got to be, again, exact.
Yes.
You have to put the exact reference.
Yes.
The exact words in Agni Yoga if you want to find it. but that's what I'm remembering, the castle of errors. And maybe even the word castle might get you there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Okay. Okay, well, we're making our way through cosmic fire, and maybe by the year 2100, we'll get there. but meanwhile, we'll learn a few things along the way. And here's Anne Veronica, right, BL?
Yes, she just added that. You can't escape karma. I guess that's in reference to in 2100 or whenever it is that we'll get to. No. I guess the perfect man is the man that had won death, has all his threads and his life in order.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, and even the masters will say, well, look, we're not perfect. And they are said to be amused at how much their students attribute to them, which are way beyond, which is way beyond their own capabilities. You know, exaggeration again. But compared to what we can do and the standard to which they hold themselves, it's very high. DK was just talking about that. I was reading it in Letters on Occult Meditation. He says, it gets more and more exacting with every step forward upon the path. So get ready, you know, get ready for that. And realize, as is said by the poet, that the road winds upward, uphill, all the way, upward, all the way. All right.
And Heike says, every error is a distortion of the plan. We have to learn to go with the plan.
Yeah, and maybe we're not so eager to see our errors, you know. We have to have what's called in Masonry, the inner monitor, looking carefully at every little thing. And here's Master Mori again. Even the smallest grain of sand can stop the largest wheel. You know, he's somehow very concrete, and he comes up with these sayings that just kind of impress you in a way that you cannot overlook again. So it's an exacting path, and every one of us can say that, but then the pain of being exacting on the path is not necessarily something we embrace so happily, and yet eventually we must. I'm always shocked, you know, this second ray master DK, how very exacting he can be about what has to be done, or you just don't get there. So we're all together here realizing the demands that will be made upon us, and we have the choice: do we fulfill those demands, or do we give ourselves a lot of slack? You know, kind of a Jupiterian thing. Well, here's a lot of rope, but the old saying about rope: if there's too much, you can hang yourself on that. So developing a kind of intense attitude is a reasonable thing when we want to sustain necessary points of tension, and we don't want to let sand and dirt and distortion and whatever get in the way. Okay, Tuya and I have to get ready for our board meeting. So let's look here at the Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out. And may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everybody. And remember, 5 p.m. tomorrow, right? 5 p.m. And we'll go on with climate change and trying to invoke meditatively some adequate response to climate change. We'll see you before long. And glad to see you here. And I hope you're, you know, picking up something that will be of value as a foundation for your deeper and deeper studies. And of course, the other two parts of that triangle, meditation and service. So nice to work with you. Bye-bye for now.